Oh, hello. I didn't see you there. This is Dr. Thaddeus Venture, and you're listening to the Long Box Guys. Whatever that means. Around the road, we're going home to the place where wild nerds roam with pretty girls and dudes and kids. Going to the cons is our escape. It's like a magnet for geeks and a star-filled sky where you can be all your heroes and none of them fly. Hey, man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box. Comics talk for comics fans.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Long Box Guys. My name is Tom Strange, and with me as always are some of my very best friends since I was a very little kid. Josh, how you doing, and what are you drinking?
I'm doing all right, but I am kicking the night off with another alter ego.
Ooh. Mikey, how you doing, and what are you drinking?
I'm doing excellent, and I am drinking a Purple Haze by Abita Brewing.
Abita Brewing, one of our favorite brewing companies from Louisiana. Tommy, how you doing and what are you drinking?
I'm doing okay, and I'm drinking some Dalwhinnie Scotch. How are you doing, Tommy? What are you drinking?
I am drinking one of Mike's favorite drinks, a slutty screwdriver, mostly vodka with just a hint of tomato juice and orange juice. I like to mix them up. Yeah, that's me. It's like a virgin screwdriver, but you broke her hymen.
That makes no sense at all, Tommy.
Makes total sense to me after I get one of these down in me, sonny.
So I just want to correct LT. You are not drinking Dalwhinnie. You are pounding Dalwhinnie. I have been watching you for the last 20 minutes just guzzle that bottle.
He's got to get rid of the bottle, Mike.
I got to get rid of the bottle, Mikey.
We know you're moving, but we'll help you move your liquor cabinet. When we moved Brock, we moved like he had like a 10-gallon barrel of turpentine with less than a pint left in it, and he made us move that.
There was like one brush full in it.
Yeah. I'm like, toss some shit out, you hoarding bastard.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I got no... I got no segue there. I was going to say, maybe it's time to go to sleep. Maybe the Sandman should visit. Speaking of the Sandman, today we're going to be talking about Neil Gaiman's great creation, The Sandman. One of his better creations. I really like The Sandman, but not as much as our good friend Mike does, so he's going to give us the background.
Right, so Sandman, also known as Morpheus, one of the Endless, was created by Neil Gaiman and published under the DC Comics imprint Vertigo, lasted for 75 issues from 1989 to 1996. So beyond gods in the DC universe, there are the seven endless. It's destiny, death, desire, despair, delirium, destruction, and Morpheus, also known as Dream. And they each control different realms, and they are eternal. They've been around at the beginning, and they are going to be there at the very end. The book itself is not just what you would call a normal comic book, because it varies in tone depending on the story. Sometimes it's gothic horror. Sometimes it's high fantasy. It's sometimes it's even science fiction. The way they, Dream is all about how people dream and the way he controls the dreams. So the stories that he can tell are endless. One of the great things about the series is that not only does it pay homage to some classic DC characters, like he makes Cain and Abel members of Morpheus's dream stable. From the old House of Mystery and House of Secrets days. Destiny was also part of the House of Secrets mythology back in the 1970s when they started doing horror comics again, and he gathers him up and makes him one of the Endless. The three witches also make an appearance, and they were very prominent in the 1970s House of Secrets, House of Mystery series. So he pulls from all that, but he also pulls from superheroes in places that you would expect, like Wesley Dodds as the Sandman, and from places that you wouldn't expect, like John Jones in the Justice League. So they've got all these kind of little Easter eggs hidden throughout. For those of us who grew up loving DC Comics, it's really nice to see that all these characters were brought into this incredible series. Morpheus himself was pretty much kept out of DC continuity until recently. During Scott Snyder's Metal series, he actually makes an appearance in it, which was a big deal. And it's leading into the launch of Neil Gaiman's very own title run, The Sandman, which is going to start, I think, this month. DC Comics is going to be starting to print a new imprint called Sandman.
Now, I was wondering if any of you guys found it to be, I assume influenced, if not directly related to, as the Sandman comic starts, what is it, 89 or 90?
89, yeah.
89, which is really the culmination, the year after the culmination of Pierce Anthony's incarnations of immortality.
Culmination.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, culmination.
Sorry, that's the assistant coach when the coach is giving a speech, just saying one random word afterwards. It's a joke in my head, and it's funny, but I guess no one else thinks it's funny, okay?
If you think it's funny, go ahead and write into Lucky Bastard at the Long Box Guys.
Lucky Bastard.
So, anyway, you were saying, Josh?
Anyway, Pierce Anthony's wrote the Incarnations of Immortality series, a very similar theory with a slightly different division of duties. But I know, I said duty.
Duties.
Shut up.
Duties.
Yeah. And even that is a derivative of a poem by William Wordsworth called The Ode to the Intimations of Immortality, where he dictates what the eternal aspects of the universe are. And there are variations through all three. And actually, even though Pierce Anthony misses a couple of Wordsworth ones, they come back in Neil Gaiman's.
I don't know if he was influenced or not by it. I know that he originally wanted to do the Sandman from Joe Simon and Jack Kirby's creation from the 1970s, and that's what he had originally pitched to DC. And DC was like, no, but why don't you make your own character?
Okay.
So originally that was his thought, and then he pitched the concept, and then he just started to spin out of control. I mean, he weaves so many different narratives of mythology, not just Norse mythology, but Greek and Egyptian and all these other mythologies into it. I think this is a guy who just loves religion and has been studying all the different mythologies for years. This is a prelude. If you like American Gods, this is going to be the series that you should read before American Gods, because he really establishes his storytelling in it. It's the way the art was done in this book is also beautiful, and it varies from issue to issue because they couldn't keep up with Gaiman, and they had to bring in different artists to do the different series, which makes it seem like there are different stories going on, even though it's a continuing story, which is really good. But the thing that I think is most impressive is the lettering. And you never hear about a letterer in comic books. Everybody talks about the artists, people talk about the writers, but the lettering in this is also phenomenal. And it was the same guy throughout. And I apologize, Todd Klein, that's his name. He does an amazing job. The fonts that he chooses and the way that he chooses to write different sections makes it seem like each character has a distinctive voice just through the lettering. I also think it's amazing that at some points he does the lettering in cursive, which is awesome because I know my daughter, who I love, could not read it because she was never taught cursive. So she'd be looking at the comic going, "What the hell is this?"
I have to agree with you there. One of my favorite bits is that when he's doing Delirium, He will often go to just different fonts altogether, almost randomly, and the typeset will be wavy at times, giving her kind of an off-kilter, unworldly feel, which is exactly perfect for the character.
And I like the fact that the artwork did change from issue to issue, because to me it kind of represented how every dream is different.
So the one thing I have to say, one of the aspects of Gaiman I do not appreciate, both in the comics and in his novels, is every character, including 9-year-olds, speak as if they have a PhD in English.
You have mentioned this flaw before, my friend.
I love Neil Gaiman's imagery. I love the concepts that he comes up with. Like you said, Mike, the mythology he lays down and how he translates it is beautiful. And then he has the unerring mistake. I think, barring the lettering, all of his characters sound a little too alike for me.
It's true. He can draw an apple. He can have an Apple John in there, which is the young boy that picks apples out of the bottom of a barrel at the prostitute's brothel to help feed vagrants, talk like he's just coming back from a class at Harvard.
I will argue this slightly. In Volume 4, Seasons of Mist, where he has the key to hell that Lucifer has given him, and all these different entities are trying to get the key to hell so they can take it over, the little girl with the balloon representing the Lords of Chaos does not talk like she has an English degree. She talks like a Cockney. And she's adorable the way she mispronounces all her words. And scary at the same time.
But, Mike, the cat that is going out into trying to find the cat dreamer to find out why cats are subservient to man, trying to find the dream king of cats, also speaks like that cat has an English degree.
That cat does have an English degree. It spent 6 years at Harvard. Thank you very much.
So, I mean, I can see, and he might be more, I have read less of the comics than I have of the novels, and maybe he's more diligent when he's forced to actually see the character. But in a lot of his novels, they are, the tone of everybody is a little too similar for me. I don't like his dialogue, really, when it comes down to it. I love everything else. I just wish somebody else wrote the poor man's dialogue.
I had to look up the word puissant today. Exactly. I had to look up the word puissant and how to say it correctly, too, because I was like, what is this word? It's very rarely, fairly infrequent that I get stumped on a word in a comic book. And I was just,
isn't that just fish?
No, it's having great power or influence.
Yeah, puissant. That's puissant.
Poisson.
Almost spelled like poison. Yeah, poisson is fish in French, yeah.
So what were some of your favorite issues of Sandman?
My favorite issue was when the muse Calliope was bound by a writer and sold from one old has-been writer to another writer who had one success and was out of ideas and could not write and had writer's block. And so he bought this muse and abused and, dare I say, raped this muse and held her captive. And so she begged everyone that she knew to find a way to free her. And finally Morpheus came to her aid. And Morpheus told the writer, he said, you have to let her go. And he said, I can't. I have no ideas. I can't do it. Give me another year. I have no ideas. And so then Morpheus said, oh, it's like that. And Morpheus just immediately gave the man nightmares and just turned his world upside down and gave him all the ideas at once and drove him mad. And it was just a brilliant telling of the tale. And in it, it worked very well because everyone in that book had to have an English degree.
There you go. We're all famous writers. This makes total sense.
Made perfect sense.
So one of my favorite stories of the Sandman, and you have to take it by stories. You can't really take it by issues. It's Hob, who is sitting in a bar drinking and talking to his friends and saying, I've decided I'm not going to die. Death is for other people. I'm not going to do it. Meanwhile, Death and Dream are standing right next to him, and they decide, okay, let's see how this works. So Dream comes over and says, if you don't intend on dying, can I ask you how it turns out? And the guy's like, sure, fine. When do you want to talk about it? He goes, I'll meet you back here in 100 years. And so 100 years go by, and Dream shows up, and Hob shows up, and he's like, I haven't aged a day. I don't know what kind of spell you did, but this is amazing. This is great. I'm having a great time. And every 100 years, they meet at that same bar. Eventually, it's a coffee house or whatever. But it's the closest thing that Dream has to a true friend. Although Hob would say that they're friends, Dream would be insulted by the mere thought that he is above such mortal concerns as needing friends. But it really is the closest thing that he has to a friendship. Just meeting this guy every 100 years, which is nothing to Dream, but for Hob, he goes through all these adventures, these highs and lows. He hates everything that's been going on and how sad his life has become, and then he's elated by it again. But all in all, he's too afraid. Well, I don't know if he's afraid, but he still loves life so much that he refuses to die. And that's really what Dream is about. Because in the first series, he's captured and spent 70 years locked away from his power and out of the dreaming. And when he comes back, he's, for the first time in eons, is reflecting on the wrongs that he's done and actually starts himself down a path of correcting some of the mistakes that he's made. So I think that's just one of the best parts of the storytelling.
Wait, he does. My name is Earls it?
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit. That's how he does.
I'd watch that.
Yeah. So, like I said, Mike, I haven't read a lot of this, but I did read the beginning, and that is actually one of the things I really enjoyed. Is sort of the telling of time for the 75 or 85 years he was incarcerated in glass, right? And sort of like the generations and different people that sort of caretake that glass prison while he's stuck there. And how I don't know if they ever explain how he has some sense when he's going to be finally released, because he has a couple of prognostications telling people soon when they first try to finally communicate with him, right? I don't know if they ever explain that.
He's also endless, so like soon for him might not be soon for everybody. I don't know.
No, but he says during that series that time passes for me just like mortals. This was a horrible thing for me. I am not relieved of that burden, the burden of time. So that those 75 years really do weigh on him in a way that, you know, maybe not a normal prisoner because he has lived so long, but he is not, you know, removed from that burden, that the mental anguish of being locked in a prison for 75 years. But yeah, I don't know if they ever address it ever again, but that sort of incarceration is really sort of an interesting aspect that, like you said, how he starts to atone. Where if it didn't feel like 75 years, he'd have nothing to atone for, right?
Right. He wouldn't feel responsible for what happened while he was gone and not living up to his duties. But he also then reflects on things that he's done in the past. Like, you know, he fell in love with this beautiful woman one time and offered to make her the queen of the dream realm, and she turned him down, and so he banished her to hell, and she spent 10,000 years there. And then he's like, maybe I was a little rash.
Perhaps a little harsh. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the great thing about this comic is it, you know, you're reading it at one point and you're like, okay, this is supernatural. This is horror. Okay, wait, no. Now it's telling me a charming tale of some fairies. This is fantasy now. Oh, wait a second. No, it's a convention of serial killers. And this girl is at the wrong hotel at the wrong time. Oh, shit, she's going to die. And it becomes this realistic horror kind of comic book. So it bounces from all these different genres. When this series first came out back in the late 80s and early 90s, I read a few issues of it, and I didn't like the artwork, and I didn't collect it. I was like, yeah, this is just not my style. Now, being older and I hope a little bit wiser, I read it now and I'm like, holy crap, this is one of the best comic book series ever. But LT, you already talked about yours. Josh, you mentioned yours. Tom, you got any?
You know, I was never a huge fan, but one little aspect that I always hang on to when I'm reading this is death. And I love the fact that everyone likes death. Nobody rejects death. Well, very few people have ever rejected death. Death is a friend that comes to you when you need death. So if death is trying to hail a cab, the cab driver goes, you know, it's a nice day. You're a pretty girl. It's free. Everyone immediately likes death because death is there to relieve us of pain and anguish, not to cause it. And that was just one of the small lessons of this comic book that I really, really did enjoy. Plus, she's a cutie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like that goth look. And I don't remember tons of the stories. I mean, I always remember enjoying them. They just didn't seem to stick quite as hard as some of the big storylines. I found them more to be like vignettes than novels in my mind.
Well, there has been talk for years about a Sandman movie. Gordon Joseph Levitt was trying to get it made for quite a while. He has pulled out of it, which is a shame because he was trying to get it made for years because he loves the series. And I think whoever does end up making this a television series, I hope it's a television series, not a movie, because it lends itself to episodic TV because it could be like the next Twilight Zone where you've got these reoccurring characters who just pass through different genres all the time.
It would be better as like American Horror Story where they take a season to do one kind of thing.
And they could use the same cast to do the...
And they use the same cast for the next one. I think it would actually lend itself to that really well.
See, and I could see it very much in sort of a Black Mirror type situation.
Oh, good one too, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a modern Twilight Zone, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and nobody out there has seen Black Mirror. If you when I watched the first episode, I thought it was a ongoing series and not Twilight Zone-ish. And I my mind was like, I don't know where this series is going to go from here.
Like, where do you go from virtual reality fucking a pig?
I was very concerned after watching the first episode.
All right. Anyone have any last thoughts on Neil Gaiman's The Sandman? I am a slightly bigger fan of Punch and Judy. That's Neil Gaiman too, correct? Punch. Right? Didn't he write Punch? Tommy? I could be wrong. Neil Gaiman's just very prolific. He could have written...
Maybe. I mean, I really like Death. He also spun off Lucifer.
He's written a ton of novels. Are you talking about one of his novels or are you talking about comic books?
It was a graphic novel.
Huh. The Tragical Comedy of Mr. Punch was authored by Neil Gaiman.
Yeah, that was a really good one. If you guys missed that one, it was kind of a retelling of the Punch and Judy tale, where Punch was an abusive husband. Of course, he always was an abusive husband. That was kind of his whole shtick, if you would. It's a real good read. The illustrations are haunting and awful and beautiful at the same time. And I do recommend this. I would even say highly.
Well, we shouldn't forget Neil Gaiman also wrote the Books of Magic, which is one of
the
greatest introduction into the realms of magic in the DC universe. You're never going to find a better four-issue series.
And the most well-spoken children in all of comicdom.
Because Tim Hunter has a degree from Oxford.
I don't know why that made me mad.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah. All right, well, moving on. Mikey, what do you got at the front of the long box?
So our good friends over at Who's Next Gaming and Losing Lives, the Sammy Savage podcast crew, they've invited me to come on a future podcast and talk to them about video games that are also comics, or comics that are also video games. So I have been reading Archie Comics' Sonic the Hedgehog, and I got to tell you, you are welcome, Seth Meyers, because I am really killing myself reading these comics. But it is one of the few video games that I've played that I can actually read. No, actually, I'm just kidding. Sonic is a great comic. It's an all-ages comic. It is nothing serious, nothing heavy. It's just fun. If you've got a kid out there who likes video games and enjoys Sonic the Hedgehog, this is the perfect comic for them. It's just irreverent.
You know, let me recommend something for you then. The Wolf Among Us. Did you read that comic book?
I did not.
Oh, The Wolf Among Us is a terrific comic book, and it's a really good iOS game.
I have not seen it. I was trying to get a game that I had actually played, because I've read Tomb Raider and Injustice Gods Among Us, but and Turok, Dinosaur Hunter, all those acclaimed series, but I had never played any of the video games because I have too addictive a personality.
How many years off of World of Warcraft?
I don't know. I've been clean for over a dozen years, I think.
Yeah, me too. But now I have a Mac, so I might run it again. I hear it's better. Tommy, what do you got at the back of the long box?
I've got Eclipse by Zachary Kaplan and Giovanni Timpano. This was put out by Top Cow back in February of 2017. It was a sort of a police procedural in a futuristic post-apocalyptic society. The sun had a massive solar flare, and it had caused the sun to every day burn brighter and hotter than it normally did, such that people were forced to live underground. For some strange reason, they would come up at night, even though that kind of was a little hard to swallow. But if they come up during the daytime, they would get instantly burned alive. So people would live underground during the day and sometimes come up to surface at night and such. And it was a society that totally lived underground, and people in ice suits would come up during the day. And yes, Tom.
A quick question. Were they freaks?
They were not freaks, Tom.
Because the freaks come out at night.
It's true. The freaks come out at night, but these were just people trying to live in a world where the sun kills. And, So there were people in ice suits that would help maintain the solar power grids and things like that during the day, special suits. And they came upon a person that was murdered during the day. And it was all about solving that crime. And it was a really interesting sort of futuristic solving crime sort of story, and had lots of twists and turns and intrigue and such. It was good. If you suspended your disbelief about a few things, it was pretty good.
All right. Suspend your disbelief about a few things, and it's pretty good. Which brings me to my little segment, a tiny little segment this week that I'm calling Tom's Overly Optimistic Movie Review. I saw Happy Time Murders, and it was friggin' brilliant in my brain, because I wanted to watch a crazy, stupid movie where puppets were being shot and having sex. And by God, that's exactly what this movie is. Puppets being shot and killed, and then having, and then also weird puppet sex and craziness. Melissa McCarthy was hilarious. Maya Rudolph is an angel on earth and we should worship her. And Phil Philman is going to be my next cosplay. I'm going to cosplay this puppet. I swear to God, I've already figured out a way to do it, and I'm doing it. Anybody see it, by the way?
I have not seen it.
It's been totally bad. Critics are saying it's... Mikey, what did you think?
I used my movie pass, so it was well worth the money.
All right. But did you enjoy it? Did you have any fun? I had fun.
I did laugh when they found the murder weapon of the second TV star from the hot tub.
All right, fair enough.
They walked in. Like, I think I found the murder weapon. That cracked me up.
It was a pug. It was a pug that tore him apart. You didn't laugh at pilafing?
No.
Pilafing is what they do in prison sometimes to Muppets. They take all your stuffing out, fill you up with rice aroli, and fuck you until you're fucking full of nothing but mush. It's called pilafing. All right. I'm sorry that was a little... I'm always optimistic when I go see a movie because I always like try to like what I like. I like that. Little tangential. And Josh, that's usually your purview. Josh, what do you got for us?
Yeah, so I was thinking about the whole Neil Gaiman. He spans a lot of media. And I'm thinking, who's your guys' other favorite people who go... who either started in comics and... burst out of comics or started in a more popular medium and dropped into comics. So like I have tried to read Chris Claremont wrote a couple of novels and Chris Claremont is my favorite comic book writer of all time. He's not my favorite book writer of all time. So I'm just wondering who else in the world do you think traveled well between comics and other mediums?
Well, of course. Okay, Tommy.
I was going to say Harlan Ellison. He did a lot of TV shows that were great. He wrote some books, and he also did a bunch of comics that were great.
What comics did Harlan Ellison do?
He did The Authority. He did a bunch. He did City on the Edge of Forever for Star Trek. He wrote tons and tons of comic books.
Huh. I know him more as a TV show guy.
Yeah, he got started in comic books.
Oh, I didn't know that. Huh. All right, blind spot for Tommy. This Tommy, not you, Tommy. Who's the guy that wrote Game of Thrones? I mean, that's an obvious choice.
George R.R. Martin?
George R.R. Martin, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, TV, television, comic books. I like him. I mean, I don't just say that to be the outsider, but my favorite thing that I ever did was still going to be the Wild Card series for me.
Well, he only wrote a very small portion of Wild Cards. He was mostly the editor and brought all the other authors together. And don't get me wrong, I love Wild Cards, and it's been picked up by HBO. So,
yeah, I can't wait for that.
I'm just wondering where they're going to start. I wonder if they're going to start in the modern era or if they're going to start with the original characters. Because if I don't see Fortunato on HBO, then somebody's doing it wrong.
Yeah, Fortunato was made for HBO. Come on.
Yes.
Tantric magic guy, come on.
He might have possibly been made for Cinemax.
Skinemax, you say?
So I'm going to go with Michael J. Straczynski.
What'd you call me?
Yeah, exactly. He was a comic book writer, wrote for Thor and Fantastic Four. He did some Wonder Woman, some Superman comics. And he also wrote some Babylon 5. And he had a TV show called Jeremiah. Do you guys remember that?
I still remember that, yeah.
It was a post-apocalyptical thing. That was actually really good. And I believe he's also involved in Sense8, the show on Netflix.
I heard good things about Sense8, but I haven't gotten into it yet.
The Jean Von Don Von?
How's that Van Damme Van? Is it that Van? Keep drinking, LG.
You mean Jean-Claude Van Johnson? Is that what you meant?
Yeah.
No, there was like a Jean-Claude Van Damme Van. There was a guy that ran a van that was like,
oh, yeah, that's right.
It was and I am done with the bottle.
Yeah, but you're right. Sense8, they had the Jean-Claude Van Damme bus.
Yeah.
Bus. Don't call it a van. It's a bus.
Oh, he called it a van.
He should have called that a bus.
Yeah, and I think Frank Miller did a great job between the movie versions of Sin City and the comics, but
yeah.
But he's so insane now, it's hard to like him.
Well, yeah, he's so insane, yes. Yeah. Oh.
What did Frank Miller do that he went insane?
Oh.
We'll talk about that off the air.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not
even. I hate it when people I like go insane.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say he's insane, but his political views are a little more radical in line than ours. Oh, pretend for a second Batman decided he hated Muslims. Because Frank Miller did.
Or just imagine a regular person's political views and then turn it black and white full of bullets, blood, and racism.
Yeah.
It's basically the Sin City of politics.
I hate it when that happens.
Yeah, I call it the Dennis Miller effect. You know, 9/11. Dennis Miller was a funny, normal comic, maybe a little more right-leaning than me, but not by so much. And then, boom, 9/11 happens, and he pisses himself and becomes a radical.
Well, I mean, they get it. They should have Dennis Miller. I mean, how many right-wing comics are really out there who are sometimes funny?
Yeah.
Almost none.
Yeah, they need at least one Dennis Miller.
Yeah. Granted.
Granted, right-wing.
I give that to you guys.
All right, I guess that's it for tangents. Let's go on to plugs, my friends.
I would like to thank Kirby Crackle for providing us our geek rock music every week. You can check them out at kirbycracklemusic.com or buy their music on Bandcamp. I'd also like to give a plug out to Fezorama.com. That's right. For all your Fez needs, check out Fezorama.com. Fez-O-Rama.com. It is where I have gotten two awesome Fezes. My latest one is the Mystical Third Eye Fez to go along with my Flying Monkey Fez. Great.
And it's also where I got my drinking my martini Flying Fez.
Yes, yes. Fezorama.com. We should also thank our fellow podcasters, Who's Next Gaming, which I talked about earlier, the Nola Nerd Couple, and everybody else out there.
That's right. And, of course, we always thank our good friends Tammy and Ian Lino over at GeekOrthodox.com.
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 Hi, Tammy.
Purveyors of fine things, including my Scotch glass, which I broke yesterday, making it the sixth Johnny Walker Skywalker glass I broke. To be fair, it was broken by Patreon and longtime backer of the podcast, Tony, who accidentally dropped it off the fire pit out back. But accidents happen. It's okay.
Well, I know where you can get some more of those. You can go to geekorthodox.com. You can get that, T-shirts, stained glass prints. It is the official stained glass maker for John Barrowman.
Damn right it is.
And
Tommy, you got
official,
right.
And the official sock provider of Neil Gaiman. Neil Gaiman buys all of his socks from geekorthodox.com. Prove me wrong.
Prove us wrong, children. Prove us wrong.
What's wrong?
LT, what do you got for us?
I would like to thank Avery Johnny and the Killbillies, who has got me through this home buying process.
What name your favorite Killbilly song?
Oh, I would have to say Drag Subtle. Race and the Devil.
Good one. A very good one. Josh, you got anything to plug?
Bellingham. Go to Friendly Neighborhood Comics, because that place is clean.
Mm. And don't forget, let's not forget that we're here for our regular listeners, but also our Patreon page over at longboxguys.com/Patreon or something like that. Patreon.
It's www.patreon.com/thelongboxguys.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And for as little as $1 a month, you can help sponsor us. And when you do sponsor us, we guarantee you, if you ask us, we will call you and put you on the podcast at some point. Diane's been on a dozen times. Tony's been on a couple of times. A few of our other guests have been on. Trust me, we'll give you a call, and you can be on talking with us about comic books and other stupid things.
That's right. We might even call you up for that podcast, even if you're not expecting it.
That's right. We have drunk dialed Diane twice now, which is hilarious to me. And we might as well start playing in Pensacon. The Pensacon down in Pensacola, Florida, one of our touchstone big events of the year. We always love going down there. Super well run. Bigger and bigger every year. Always have great guests. Always have a lot of fun stuff going on. Really can't say enough good stuff about it. The only drawback, a little hard to get to sometimes. Get on down to Pensacola, Florida, Pensacon.com.
Yeah.
And we also may or may not be at New York Comic Con.
So we are Schrodinger's panel at this point.
You don't know. We could be there.
You could be there. We might not be there.
We'll never know. We'll never know until we get there. It'll be just right when we get there that we can let you know. So you'll never know because this comes out a week after we talk about it.
Damn right.
So you're never going to.
And Josh, if you do go to New York, and just in case, is that your sector?
Yes, and specifically Vasalka on the Lower East Side. Their wild mushroom pierogies, that's my sector.
Ooh, Tommy, what do you got to say to us, Tommy?
This may not be the podcast you deserve, but it is definitely the podcast I drank through.
Because I have finished the bottle,
man.
Done.
I finished that bottle 10 minutes ago.
Do we always have to have a designated drunk? You're going to lose a toe because of this podcast. Mikey, what's this podcast like to you?
It's like Drunk History, but for comics.
And don't forget what I always say. Don't diss what you hate. Just promote what you love. You'll live longer. And I really do love you guys. And I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Giant man baby.
Man baby.
Man baby. I would read man baby. I just don't want to be led
by man baby.